Will it be access granted or access denied? Ontario's certification specifics, the province's plan for proof of protection, where you'll need it, where you won't, and who doesn't need to carry it at all. Good evening. The first phase of the vaccine passport rollout begins 1 week from tomorrow.
Showing your status soon to be mandatory, but who will enforce the rules? CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello's live with more. Colin.
Well, the government says they will be relying on public health inspectors, bylaw enforcement officers, and even police to enforce these new vaccine passport rules. And the deputy premier said today if there is an ugly confrontation over the vaccine passports, that a business owner could call 911 to help resolve it.
In just a matter of days, Ontario residents will be stopped at the doors and asked about their vaccine status, the province's latest effort to drive up vaccination rates.
Already, we are seeing the impact with over 90,000 first doses administered in the week following our announcement to require proof of vaccination.
The province says proof of vaccination will be required indoors in a restaurant, bar, or nightclub, at a meeting or event space, inside a gym, fitness center, or recreational facility, in casinos and bingo halls, and inside concert venues, theaters, and cinemas. But the unvaccinated will have a few exemptions. You can use the washroom if you're unvaccinated, make a retail purchase. You can be unvaccinated and place or pick up an order at a restaurant and pay for the order as well. Here's how the Chief Medical Officer of Health justifies it.
So we have always assumed outdoors is safer than indoors. If you go indoors and it's less than 15 minutes, the risk of exposures to others is much less.
Critics say there are too many loopholes.
We see how the virus operates, and it's a highly contagious virus. I just think the government didn't sharpen its pencil when it comes to preparing this certificate plan.
On October 22nd, the QR code will be ready to download. That will embed all of your vaccine information, medical exemptions, and ID. The government says businesses scanning the QR codes will not transmit the data to the province, but the province will know exactly what's in your QR code.
All information in the QR code will be connected to the Ministry of Health system in order to get that information.
When the vaccine passport takes effect on the 22nd of September, the province says local police will enforce it.
If at any point they feel threatened, we want them to call 911 as soon as possible to make sure that our police officers can be there to assist.
The deputy premier says she doesn't expect the demand on 911 to be huge. She says she's asking people to be reasonable when they're asked for a vaccine passport.
The province says those who are medically exempt will be exempt from showing a vaccine passport. But how do you prove it? The province says you should come armed with a doctor's note or a note from a nurse practitioner showing a medically valid reason for being exempt. Although today, top government officials acknowledge that fraud with doctor's notes is a possibility. Reporting live at Queen's Park, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
All right, thank you, Colin. Looking at the vaccination numbers, nearly 85.5% of eligible people in Ontario have received at least one shot, and 78.2% of eligible people are double-dosed, and that represents nearly 10.2 million people.
And our online team has full details of the rules set to take effect, including a full list of the exemptions where proof of vaccination is not required. You can find that at ctvnewstoronto.ca. Also tonight, cardiac surgeries canceled because of rising cases of COVID-19. The difficult decisions now a reality in this fourth wave. What that means for patients needing life-saving care.
But we want to turn first to some news that caught nearly everyone by surprise late today. Canadian comedy legend Norm Macdonald has died. He was just 61. The tributes for the actor and funny man prove he leaves a legacy of laughter. Family members say Macdonald had been waging a very private battle with leukemia for several years.
Born in Quebec City, going on to stardom stateside and never losing his incredibly unique style. Andrea Case joins us now in the studio with more. Andrea.
Michelle and Nathan, yes, very sad news. Norm Macdonald was the comedian's comedian. He was the last one to appear on David Letterman's nightly show. Today, the former Saturday Night Live staple has died of cancer.
You've been thinking about your mortality a lot lately?
You can't run from it.
Ah, f- I was hoping it could.
Comedian Norm MacDonald's wry humor kept people laughing for decades. Born in Quebec City in 1959, his career began on comedy stages in Ottawa, appearing on Amateur Nights at Yuk Yuk's in 1985. Citing a lack of opportunity, he headed south of the border. In the U.S., he was a contestant on Star Search. He became a writer on Roseanne, leaving that for his biggest break, a regular on Saturday Night Live. His deadpan humor was a staple on Weekend Update. He was fired from the segment and eventually the show over what he believes were creative differences with NBC brass, but returned as a guest where his impersonations continued to entertain. Film, television, and voice roles followed, as did commercial endorsements and a book deal. Social media was flooded with condolences from everyone from Premier Doug Ford and celebrities, comedians, including Conan O'Brien.
Thank you. Long live the king!
In spite of the success, in 2001, MacDonald admitted on Marc Maron's podcast he had a gambling problem, revealing he lost all of his money three times, often playing online so much he couldn't sleep.
That's time to bid you one and all goodbye.
He continued to make comedy specials and a Netflix series in 2018, closing his show with a nod to Canadian comedies Wayne and Schuster. America was his home, but he never forgot Canada.
Joining me now from Santa Monica, California, Norm MacDonald. Now, full disclosure, we've shared many off-camera laughs. He's my brother-in-law.
I know, but Question Period, W5, all the shows. Great to see you. I love you, Joyce.
Norm MacDonald was diagnosed with cancer 9 years ago. He kept his battle with the disease private. He survived by his only son, Dylan. Norm MacDonald was 61.
Just 61. You heard from Joyce Napier in the piece. She is married to Norm's brother, former reporter Neil MacDonald. Mark Breslin of Yuk Yuks told CTV News today Norm felt he bombed after his first Amateur Night at Yuk Yuks. He was leaving the stage. The manager ran after him and said, "You were great." 3 weeks of Amateur Night led to a spot on the regular roster, and the rest is history. How good he was. Reporting live, I'm Andrea Case. Michelle, I'll send it back to you.
Thank you, Andrea. To other news now, we're tracking the potential for severe weather in southern Ontario tonight. This is a shot north of the city this evening where a line of thunderstorms is expected to move through shortly. Tornado watches are also issued for parts of the province. Let's bring in Michelle Jobin with what we need to know tonight. Michelle.
Well, Michelle, we actually did have a tornado warning in place at one point in the Parry Sound area. That has now been dropped. That area is now under a severe thunderstorm warning extending through Huntsville and through the Bayfield area. Also, a severe thunderstorm warning for parts of Huron, Perth, and Grey Bruce. So, yes, widespread potential for severe thunderstorm activity. There is a broader tornado watch here in orange, and in yellow, we see a severe thunderstorm watch. So, lots going on. I'll tell you when you can expect the potential in your area. If you're in the Toronto region, it's after 8 o'clock, most likely. But here's a look at what we're seeing right now. Line of storms coming onshore from the upper Great Lakes here, extending right through Parry Sound. I've seen reports of ping-pong-sized hail near the Parry Sound area. We don't expect things to be quite as severe for the GTA, but there is the potential there for seeing some serious storms, so do keep that in mind as we head through the overnight with a low of 15 degrees. It's going to be a much calmer day tomorrow, but in the meantime, I'll tell you more about your thunderstorm risk coming up in just a little while. Michelle?
Thank you. Well, it's a verdict of not guilty for Linda O'Leary.
That ruling coming down today in connection to a 2019 boat crash that killed two people. CTV's Zoraida Allman reports.
Linda O'Leary walks into a Parry Sound courtroom this morning to receive her verdict in a 2019 boat crash that killed two people. The judgment, not guilty.
This was a charge that ought never to have been initiated, and it was a prosecution that ought never to have proceeded. There was simply no foundation and no basis to suggest any wrongdoing on the part of Linda O'Leary.
On the night of August 24th, 2019, Linda O'Leary, her husband, celebrity businessman Kevin O'Leary, and a friend were returning to their cottage on Lake Joseph after a dinner party at another cottage when the couple's boat crashed into another. Two people on the other boat, 64-year-old Gary Poltash and 48-year-old Susanna Brito, were killed. Linda O'Leary was at the helm. In his verdict, Justice Richard Humphrey rejected the suggestion that O'Leary was impaired at the time of the crash, nor, he said, was there enough evidence to determine what speed O'Leary was traveling when the collision occurred. And perhaps most importantly, the judge found the other boat did not have its navigational lights on at the time of the crash. Video surveillance shown during the trial shows the moment of the crash, where one light is moving left to right. Seconds later, two lights appear. Defense lawyer Ari Goldkind is not surprised by the verdict.
Linda O'Leary was essentially driving into a sitting, pitch-black boat, and he, in fact, talked about how Linda O'Leary was an experienced boater, not impaired, took reasonable precautions. And again, the end of this, while it's a tragedy and lives were lost, this was a prosecution that really had absolutely no merit.
While the criminal charges may be settled, this case is not over. Lawyers for Gary Poltash and Susanna Brito called today's verdict a further disappointment for the families in their pursuit of justice. A statement reads in part, "Despite the acquittal by the court, the families will continue to fight for justice civilly. O'Leary was charged under the Canadian Shipping Act following the collision. The acquittal in this matter has no bearing on the victim's family's civil lawsuit."
Now, Linda O'Leary was charged with one count of careless operation of a vessel under the Canada Shipping Act. When Linda O'Leary's lawyer was asked about her reaction to the verdict, he responded that she was very emotional and remains burdened by the fact that two people were killed in this crash. The victim's lawyers say they are confident justice will be obtained for the families in civil court. I'm Zoraida Allman. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Zoraida. Turning next to the situation at Western University and a warning about some of the details in this story. More people are speaking out amid allegations of 30 women being drugged and sexually assaulted.
Police and the school opening an investigation, but they're looking for people to file formal complaints. CTV's Raheem Ladani joins us live with more. Raheem.
Well, Nathan, Michelle, these allegations have sparked a lot of concern among students and parents. I had one father message me saying his daughter is terrified to be on campus. And it's also opening up wounds for sexual assault survivors who haven't shared what happened to them at Western until now.
On the sidewalk outside Medway Sydenham Hall, a student worried about her safety says she saw women lying on the ground around 2 a.m. Saturday morning after a party.
Completely unconscious. Some of them were able to say just a couple of things, but we couldn't really, understand them.
Social media posts allege upwards of 30 women were drugged and sexually assaulted. London police say no formal complaints have been filed.
So many investigations involve some aspect of social media. So it's really a matter of knocking on doors and talking to people to get the facts.
The incident is also prompting other women to speak out about their own experience at Western. Tiana, who has given consent to share her first name and story, says while visiting a friend on Halloween in 2015, a guy she met wouldn't leave their dorm and secretly followed her into the bedroom.
Suddenly he was just behind me in the room with me, and I was wearing a skirt, and I didn't even hear him come in. I didn't hear him take off his clothes. Suddenly it was like the blink of an eye, like my skirt was gone, and like he was just there.
Tiana pushed him off and says the next day he pleaded not to report him. She didn't, but wasn't able to forget.
I stopped going to class, like my grades dropped like crazy. I didn't even know like what to do. I literally left school and I went back home.
Western University says educating students on gender-based violence is a priority. But Tiana says there needs to be a culture change.
Instead of, blaming victims and telling them what they need to do to keep themselves safe, it instead needs to focus on these people, these perpetrators doing it.
And holding them accountable.
The president of Western, Alan Shepard, also spoke today and says the university has increased patrols by 20% and increased campus security officers by 5 times since the allegations surfaced. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Raheem. Still ahead, an emergency fix at Apple issued thanks to a flaw found right here in Toronto. What the solution will mean for keeping your digital security safe and protected.
Returning to our virus coverage and the newest case count across the province. Public Health Ontario is logging 577 new cases in its most recent update. 452 of those are among people who are either not fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. More than 21,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, and the province's positivity rate is sitting at 2.3%.
683 more cases are now considered resolved, raising the total to more than 560,000 over the course of the pandemic. Seven more deaths are linked to the virus, although the province points out one of those deaths occurred more than a month ago. 9,624 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown looks like this. 116 new cases in the city of Toronto and 67 in Peel Region. There are 46 new cases in York Region, 31 in Niagara, and 21 in Halton. Hamilton has 19 new cases with 13 in Durham Region.
CTV's John Musselman is next with the COVID-19 situation in GTA schools. John.
Well, Michelle, we have two active cases at this school behind me. Now, health experts say this isn't a surprise. They are expecting this. And parents say, the ones we talked to today say they just want to make sure their kids are safe, but they do want them in school.
Parents arriving at Alvin Curling Public School in Scarborough today say they are a bit anxious, but feel reassured the school is doing the right thing after learning there are two confirmed student cases of COVID-19 here.
They are keeping us updated and they are working with Toronto Public Health.
We are scared, but the school has been doing like very good on the protocols.
As we enter the second week of a return to the classroom, schools in the GTA were reporting the following COVID case numbers. 109 cases, that's up from 74 yesterday. The TDSB says they have 25 known cases spread across 20 schools.
I'm not concerned. I think these are isolated cases, and I think it's important for kids to go to school.
Infectious disease specialist Dr. Isaac Bogosh says the key question to consider is the transmission rate within the schools.
It will certainly be brought into the schools. We know that. And the rate at which it's brought into the schools will be basically reflective of the rates in the community. But to what extent is this being transmitted in the schools? That is yet to be determined.
I think the school board and Toronto Public Health are working well together to really try to keep the schools clean, clean as in free of COVID, and to make sure they stay open.
We have a house full of people, so it is a little bit of a concern. We don't want it coming home, obviously.
We are cautious, but we want to send our child to school.
Bogosh says outbreak management protocols are in place in Ontario schools. There are currently 286 active cases among staff and students in schools across the province. And in Ontario, we do know that at least 60 classrooms are now working online, and at least one school in Cornwall has been closed because of an outbreak. Reporting live, I'm John Musselman. I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, John. Next, to a dramatic example of how our health system is still on the brink amid this pandemic.
Several cardiac surgeries canceled at a Hamilton hospital. CTV's Sean Lathong reports.
The ICU at Hamilton General Hospital is facing the grim reality of the fourth wave. Last Friday, a rise in the number of COVID-19 patients meant
we had to cancel every single cardiac surgery operation on Friday that was scheduled to be done that day.
A total of four heart surgeries. Patients who had been waiting for much needed care.
You feel responsible for those patients. And so when you have to go to them and say, sorry, we can't do your surgery today, it's like a gut punch.
Currently in the ICU here, there are 13 patients with COVID-19. Eight COVID patients require advanced care using an ECMO machine.
All of the patients in Hamilton Health Sciences in the ICU right now on life support with COVID are unvaccinated.
Doctors say these patients are taking up ICU beds, ECMO machines, and staffing in the form of nurses that are needed elsewhere. As for those who are getting the critical care that they need, they say they don't know what they would have done or what could have happened if their surgeries had been canceled. Judy Wilcox is visiting her husband, Bill, who had a heart valve replacement 2 weeks ago, but complications put him in the ICU.
Even the nurses admitted we almost lost him last Tuesday when they had to transfer him to ICU.
He's now recovering, but Wilcox says it's scary to think what could have happened if they had come later.
A lot of us feel that a lot of people in the that have COVID right now don't necessarily need to have it because if they'd gotten the shots.
Dr. Sharma says that they're taught to take care of the sickest person in front of them, but...
And it's frustrating because really if those people had just gotten the vaccine, they likely wouldn't be there.
A problem, he says, that is expanding provincially and nationally. Sean Lathong, CTV News.
From hospitals to long-term care now, and the call still to make vaccinations mandatory.
A home in Oshawa dealing with more cases. CTV's Saran Fennell reports.
That's my daughter, Taryn, to the right, my mom in the center, and myself to her left.
Barb Cavanaugh is visiting her 96-year-old vaccinated mother at Hillsdale Estates Long-Term Care Home in Oshawa.
Two doses, and she has a booster coming up this week.
According to the Durham Region's latest update of the home, there are 5 active resident cases, 5 active among staff, and deaths have now doubled to 4. The outbreak was contained to 2 resident home areas. As of Friday, all active cases are now cohorted to 1.
The last thing we want to see is more resident deaths, so it's upsetting.
Long-term care advocate Vivian Stamatopoulos says the outbreaks have often been driven by unvaccinated staff.
This is really a provincial responsibility, and we really need our premier to step up and to mandate, and I mean really mandate, not pretend mandate.
It's just incredible. Like, how can this happen?
The Ministry of Long-Term Care says it is proud of its vaccination effort. It estimates more than 90% of staff across Ontario have received at least one dose. The number of active cases at Hillsdale has dropped since last week. Lynn Mattis is hoping the downward trend continues so she can keep visiting her husband.
I don't want to go through another pandemic and then I can't visit him. I mean, it was 18 months. That's a long time.
How hard was that 18 months?
It was rough.
Quebec and now British Columbia are imposing mandatory vaccines for healthcare workers.
The ultimate end for people who choose not to be immunized, who work in healthcare, is leave without pay.
Families here at home are hoping for the same.
I believe in my heart that that is one thing that they could be doing for the people that they themselves are caring for.
3rd COVID jabs will be offered to residents this week. Saran Fennell, CTV News.
To the federal election, the leader's pulling out all the stops with less than a week to go.
They're going after voters who haven't yet decided, especially in ridings where they hope to unseat opponents. CTV's Heather Butts reports.
Canadian families deserve a break.
Aaron O'Toole outlined just how different his childcare plan is from Justin Trudeau's while campaigning in a riding the Conservatives hope to take back from the Liberals.
We're helping all families immediately. Our support goes directly to the families, not to other governments and orders of government.
The Conservatives are promising a tax credit of 26 to 75% based on income. For example, families with an annual income of up to $50,000 would be reimbursed up to $6,000 a year per child under the age of 7. Families earning more than $160,000 would be reimbursed about $2,000 a year. Justin Trudeau picked a Conservative stronghold in Richmond, BC to contrast his climate plan.
We know, as Canadians, we have to listen to the experts on climate science. We have to listen to the experts on how to be even more ambitious on climate change.
Among the Liberal promises, incentives for consumers. Energy-saving retrofit grants of up to $5,000 and up to $40,000 interest-free loans, plus rebates of up to $5,000 on zero-emission vehicles. Trudeau got a boost today from former BC Green Party leader Andrew Weaver.
This is a plan that I've been dreaming of for most of my life.
His endorsement of the Liberal plan coming as Green Party leader Annamie Paul ventured outside Toronto, campaigning with candidates in the Maritimes.
Oh, wow. Hello, PEI!
Campaigning for sought-after seats in Ontario, NDP leader Jagmeet Singh pledging once again to make cell phone and internet service more affordable and accessible.
And one of the proposals that we put forward is looking at putting in place a publicly owned Crown Corporation to invest in the infrastructure necessary to connect communities that don't have access to the internet.
Singh is committing to work with the CRTC to force telecom giants to reduce and cap prices below the global average and require corporations to offer unlimited wireless data options at an affordable rate.
Elections Canada is estimating that more than 5.5 million people voted at advance polls. That's up more than 18% from 2019. Heather Butts, CTV News, Toronto.
And CTV will have comprehensive live coverage on election night. Be sure to watch Election 2021 on the CTV main network, CTV News Channel, or at ctvnews.ca. It all begins at 7 p.m. next Monday.
Local baseball fans have a lot to cheer about these days. The Blue Jays are flying high.
The team looking to finalize a spot in the postseason. Win or lose, they certainly are a fun squad to watch. CTV's Austin Delaney's live outside the Rogers Centre with more. Austin.
And Jays fans going in tonight have to show proof of vaccination or a recent COVID test, a negative test. We have a Manitoba fan who came all the way for this series and was denied entry last night, even though he had the proper certificates.
Hooks it down the left field.
A quick, hard swing of the bat, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has something to talk about at the family dinner table. His league-leading 45th home run pushes him past his father's single-season high when he played with the Expos back in 2000. This is the kind of ball fans have been clamoring for.
We were at the game last night, actually. I mean, Vladdy with 45 homers, like, it doesn't get more exciting than that.
Oh, the atmosphere is electric. You know, everyone was just rocking there. It's just super loud. It felt like a playoff game.
But 70-year-old Bruce Perry, who flew in from Manitoba just for the series, missed it all.
Great game. Like, probably the best game that I missed.
Perry says he had all the vaccine documents with him at the gate.
This is my Manitoba driver's license for my photo ID, my immunization card from Manitoba, and my QR code on my phone. So I showed all these to them, and they wouldn't accept it.
He said they would not scan properly and was told to get a rapid COVID test, but he couldn't get one without an appointment. The Blue Jays are investigating, saying they accept out-of-province vaccine certificates, and if Perry had the proper ID stating he was double vaccinated by World Health Organization-approved vaccines, he should have been allowed into the game. It is a good time to watch the Jays. They are on fire. They beat the league-leading Rays 8-1 with 17 hits last night on a 15-2 tear. But can they keep the momentum going?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, this has been a fairly inconsistent ball club this year. So I think, you know, you kind of wonder, are they peaking too early maybe? But they needed to have this run to get back into the wild card mix.
They now hold the first place wild card spot. And Perry is inside. He's at his seat. His scan worked. The Jays tell me it was a one-off, a training issue, and they have rectified the situation. Reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney.
Thank you, Austin. Still to come, a Pickering Bridge getting some worldwide recognition. Why this time-saving trip for commuters is officially in a league of its own.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, every year 911 operators get thousands of accidental pocket dials that waste time and resources. There are also hundreds of calls made by children playing with phones. Durham Region just brought in a new system to deal with these calls. I'll have my report just ahead.
Continuing to track the potential of severe weather for you, we have a line of storms that has come onshore. Areas like Grey Bruce County extending into the Parry Sound, Muskoka, Huntsville area. These are severe storms. They have been had the history of some ping pong size hail. There were some tornado warnings for the Parry Sound area earlier. Broader risk of severe weather as we head into the evening and the overnight. Toronto, you could see that after 8 o'clock. And while we do not have a tornado warning in effect right now, some areas of the province have seen some warnings. So here's a reminder of what to do if there are warnings. Go indoors to a basement, bathroom, stairwell, or interior closet on the lowest floor. Stay away from outside walls and windows. And there's lots more that you can do, of course. We're going to be back very soon with the rest of your forecast, including when you can expect those storms through the overnight where you live.
It's estimated about 90% of Canadians have a smartphone. And if you have one, you know it's easy to dial 911, sometimes by accident.
Accidental calls to emergency services are a huge problem. And now Durham Region has developed a new way to deal with all those pocket dials. Pat Foran has the story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Thanks, Michelle and Nathan. It may seem hard to believe, but 911 operators get hundreds of calls each day that are made by accident. They have to phone back, but many people don't pick up. Now Durham Region is responding using text messages, which has cut their workload in half.
We get hundreds sometimes of these calls a day. It amounts to thousands per year.
Inspector Paul Hallett with Durham Regional Police says a new approach to dealing with pocket dials is helping reduce the workload for 911 operators.
Hello, it's 911. Your cell phone just called us. Is there an emergency or was it a missed dial?
When they used to get an accidental call, they had to phone back twice and often people wouldn't answer the phone. Now they send a text message explaining a call was made to 911 and they should answer to confirm if it was an accident or if they need assistance.
We're getting some pretty good success now because people do seem to respond to text messages, and then it's really cutting our calls in half.
Another time waster for emergency operators is dealing with 911 calls made by children playing with phones. Halton Region said last year there were 300 cases of kids accidentally calling 911.
Kids being kids, they'll push buttons and mash buttons, and next thing you know, they're through to a 911 operator and we're talking with a child.
Even if it's an old phone that's no longer connected to a service provider, it can still dial 911. Emergency operators want everyone to be aware that accidental calls by children and adults puts unneeded strain on 911 services.
We're seeing that it's causing a lot more work and unnecessary work.
Durham's new initiative to send texts for pocket dials is also being put in place in other 911 operations centers across North America.
And if you do call 911 by mistake, don't hang up. Tell the operator it was an accidental call. There are no fines or penalties. Police just want to stop pocket dials from wasting resources. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
We've got thunderstorms expected in Toronto and then bigger concerns north of the city.
Hopefully it's not a repeat, at least in Toronto, of what we had last week. And then, yeah, hopefully it's relatively tame to the north of us. It's looking a bit scary.
It is indeed. And in fact, just in the last few minutes, we have had tornado warnings issued for parts of areas in and around the Grey Bruce County. We'll get to that in just a moment. Weather is brought to you by Train for home comfort, cooling and clean air. It's hard to stop a train. So let's get right to the warnings and watches that we have in place. So Kincardine and Saugeen Shores, Grey Bruce County, Southern Bruce County, this is where we have a new tornado warning in effect. There is rotation in the storms that has moved through here. We also have a tornado warning reissued for areas in and around the western edges of Algonquin Park, in and around just to the west of Parry Sound. So we are looking at some severe weather there, a broader severe thunderstorm warning, a broader tornado warning, or watch, I should say, in effect in all the areas in orange. And then we also have continued severe thunderstorm warnings for all of Grey Bruce County and Huron Perth. So lots to talk about tonight. I want to get to when we can expect this weather in and around the Toronto area. You'll notice it's quite warm in parts of Ontario right now, 30 degrees in wind are right now feeling like 36, 28 at Pearson Airport, feeling like 36. This heat and humidity has come in behind the warm front that moved in and is fueling the fire in terms of the storms that we are seeing. Overnight tonight, risk of thunderstorms after 8 o'clock in the city of Toronto, 15 degrees. So that's quite warm for the overnight period. Here's a look at our satellite and radar, and I do see the signature of some rotation in these storms that are moving through areas like Kincardine, Saugeen Shores, areas in Southern Bruce County that we are looking at right now. Bigger look here at the system that is moving through this front as it slices across the upper Great Lakes headed for us. So there's the front that is in question right now. And I want to show you on our forecast radar when we will be seeing this activity in the GTA. It will be later. Things will be a little bit cooler. So we're hoping for less severe weather, but do stay tuned for any watches and warnings that may pop up. Putting this in motion around 9:30 here. So we see it moving in just after 8 o'clock towards the GTA, really making this distinct line all the way down from the Quebec border, all the way down to the Windsor area, moving through after about 10:30. Then we get some good clearing in Toronto. The Niagara region, you'll be dealing with this difficult weather right through to the morning hours, but things should clear out afterwards through this. And then I'm taking a look at the 7-day forecast, a much calmer day on the way tomorrow, 24 feeling like 27, clearing skies and seasonal or just above seasonal right through the rest of the week with sunshine. We'll update you on the situation we're dealing with in just a little while, but in the meantime, stay with us. We'll be back just after the break with more.
Returning to our federal election coverage and a deeper look at the issues facing voters here in the GTA.
Tonight, a focus on affordable housing or lack thereof. CTV's Natalie Johnson reports.
What do we want?
Affordable housing.
With 6 days to go before the federal vote.
When do we want it?
Now.
Housing advocates insist more needs to be done to create affordable homes for those in need.
It's primary. It's number one.
Whether to rent or buy, GTA home prices keep climbing. Often $1 million needed to get into this market.
It's run of the mill here. It's run of the mill in Markham. It's run of the mill in Newmarket. It's like GTA.
It's updated kitchen with
granite counters.
Broker Shabana Raja says the GTA just keeps getting tougher for buyers.
We have clients going all the way to Peterborough, and still we have multiple offers going up there. We need to really change up things to make it more affordable for just the average person.
So what can be done to improve affordability? The parties are all pitching various ways to increase housing supply, help out first-time buyers, and limit foreign investment.
We will ban foreign investors from purchasing homes here if they don't intend to live in or move to Canada.
The Conservatives are vowing to build 1 million homes over the next 3 years to increase supply and release 15% of federal real estate for housing. They would also support 7 to 10 year mortgages, make changes to the mortgage stress test to help more Canadians qualify for financing, extend the ability to defer capital gains tax when selling a rental property and reinvesting in a rental, and increase the limit on eligibility for mortgage insurance.
We want to get big money out of housing, particularly when it comes to buying your first home.
The NDP would double the first-time home buyer's tax credit, build 500,000 units of affordable housing over the next 10 years, and waive the federal portion of the GST-HST on the construction of affordable rentals. They would also reintroduce 30-year terms to CMHC-insured mortgages on entry-level homes for first-time buyers, offer CMHC-backed co-ownership mortgages, introduce a 20% tax on sales of homes to foreign buyers, and implement a $5,000 rental subsidy for those struggling to make rent.
We need to declare housing and homelessness as national emergencies.
The Green Party would implement an empty home tax on foreign and corporate-owned vacant properties and restore tax incentives for purpose-built rental housing, and would invest in the construction and operation of 50,000 supportive housing units over 10 years, build and acquire 300,000 units of deeply affordable housing over a decade, and require that 30% of housing developments that receive federal funding are deeply affordable or available to those with special needs.
We'll crack down on the predatory speculators that stack the deck against you.
The Liberals would ban foreign ownership of new homes for the next 2 years, introduce a tax-free savings account to allow Canadians under 40 to save up to $40,000 toward their first home, and double the first-time home buyer's tax credit. They would also spend $4 billion to build or revitalize 1.4 million new homes over the next 4 years, commit $1 billion in loans for rent-to-own projects, cut CMHC mortgage insurance rates by 25%, and invest $2.7 billion in a co-investment fund for affordable housing.
Do it today if they wanted to.
A ballot box issue that the GTA will be watching.
Each level of government loves to say how they're powerless to affect things when they all have things that they could do
to make housing more affordable. Natalie Johnson, CTV News.
And tomorrow at 6, any family knows how expensive childcare can be if you're lucky enough to even find a spot. The party's promises to parents tomorrow.
Next year's UNOS will be back in Toronto, but this time outdoors. The May 22nd awards show will be held at Budweiser Stage on the grounds of Ontario Place. Organizers say going outdoors gives them some flexibility, considering the uncertainty of the pandemic. This year's 50th anniversary show was postponed twice.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
Already, we are seeing the impact. With over 90,000 first doses administered in the week following our announcement to require proof of vaccination.
Updating our top stories, under Ontario's vaccine passport system, proof of immunization will be needed to get into a variety of indoor spots, including restaurants, bars, gyms, and theaters.
You've been thinking about your mortality a lot lately?
You can't run from it.
I was hoping you could.
The comedy world is mourning the loss of Norm Macdonald. The Quebec City native died following a private battle with cancer. He was 61. Macdonald's career began in Ottawa before finding success in the United States, including a stint on Saturday Night Live. People fleeing the Taliban in Afghanistan are adjusting to life in Canada.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Reshmi Nair. Reshmi will be speaking with journalists who are supporting the refugees.
Yes, award-winning journalist and member of the Order of Canada, Sally Armstrong, is going to be joining us on CB24 tonight, Michelle, to talk about the efforts to get more Afghans here into Canada, the resettlement efforts that have just begun. There's fundraising here in the city of Toronto with the United Way, Greater Toronto, and Lifeline Afghanistan. And then we're going to hear from Maclean's editor in at large, Scott Gilmore. He's housing a few interpreters. So we're going to hear about what it's like from their personal perspectives. That's coming up on CB24 tonight with myself and Jackie Crandles.
All right. Thank you, Rashmi. And CB24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
If you have an Apple product, chances are you've spent part of the day rebooting it.
The worldwide security scare with a solution found right here in Toronto. CTV's Beth McDonnell has more.
The latest iOS update is an important one for every Apple user worldwide, whether they have a phone, computer, or watch. The tech giant issuing a security patch after Citizen Lab, based at the University of Toronto, uncovered a concerning flaw.
And that feels pretty good. That said, it's also sobering because this highlights the sophistication of the problem.
Citizen Lab says it discovered a technique allowing spyware to access devices through what's called the zero-click exploit, allowing someone to remotely hack and infect a device without the owner ever knowing. Researchers believe it was developed by NSO Group, an Israeli technology firm with products for governments to prevent crime and terror. Citizen Lab says they picked up on it while a Saudi activist was being targeted. The researchers also say Apple had no idea about the flaw, which means the company had to act right away.
Today, the targets appear to be people like activists and other, we would say, high-value people. That said, there's nothing to prevent this company tomorrow from doing what they want to do, which is sell to local governments and local police. That's a very scary thought, especially because we know that there are problems with oversight.
Citizen Lab has been analyzing this type of digital threat from Toronto for years and has local students help with some of its projects.
Make sure to update your phones, but also remember what this update means. This means there's an industry out there that is unaccountable and that is finding ways to hack any phone in the world without any action on your part.
The researchers warn while this flaw was caught, those behind the zero-click exploit are increasingly making the technology more sophisticated. Beth McDonnell, CTV News.
Just ahead, the Pickering Pedestrian Bridge going the distance in more ways than one. Finally tonight, Pickering's place in the record books.
From a ghost station to Guinness, CTV's Mike Walker explains.
Crossing North America's busiest highway, this pedestrian bridge is a landmark in Pickering that slashes travel time for GO Transit commuters.
About 30 minutes a day. Without the bridge, I'd have to find a different way across the highway.
And now the award-winning Pickering Pedestrian Bridge can add Guinness World Record holder to its accolades, officially declared the longest enclosed pedestrian bridge in the world.
I see this bridge every single day when I drive by the highway, so it's pretty exciting to know that.
The bridge's length was measured from end to end by an engineer, recorded in real time.
We were at 250 meters.
And was then verified by officials at Guinness.
We couldn't find another one around the world that was the same length. So that made us think, well, we should see if it really is the longest. And sure enough, it is.
Surprising to some commuters because it only takes minutes to cross.
I thought there were bridges that were like bigger than this, to be honest. So I'm actually pretty surprised.
When you're going, it does because it's uphill.
The $38 million bridge was completed in 2018, an engineering feat spanning across 14 highway lanes, 6 rail tracks, and a city road, connecting the GO train station in the south with the Pickering Town Center on the north end.
When we wanted the bridge built, we wanted to connect the GO station to Pickering. And what we've done is we've connected Pickering to the world.
A new world record for the city to boast about.
It's very, very impressive that it's the longest bridge of its kind.
Glad to see Pickering making it on the map for some great architecture.
Giving some transit users a new appreciation for their daily commute. Mike Walker, CTV News.
There are watches and warnings at this hour, Michelle.
Tornado warnings have now been expanded. You see these in the darker red, Hanover, Dundalk County, Southern Bruce County, extending over to Saugeen Shores, Kincardine. So very severe weather there, broader risk of severe storms as we get into the overnight, including in the city of Toronto. And of course, remember, tonight's Lotto Max jackpot is worth an estimated $50 million plus two max millions. So there's some good news for you. Back to you.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. Be sure to join Zoraida Altman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us at CTV News, have a good night.
Thank you.